Blog Talk Radio.
And you're in the G-Zone with Giovanni Gelati. Gio, what's going on today?
Welcome, everybody, to the G-Zone. I want to thank everybody for listening in today. We're going to have George Taylor's podcast as he talks about the Here Now, the Audio Fiction and Arts Festival, which he's going to be a part of. He'll tell everybody about that a little earlier in the week. Betsy Otter Thompson was with us, Margaret Grunstein. We did the Thirsty Thursday simulcast, which was a ton of fun. Next week, we have June Foster, Melanie M. Jasky. We will be simulcasting Helping Hands Press Thirsty Thursday again. Finishing out the month, we have Christy Cameron. That's on the 16th floor. Regatta on the 17th. Kim Vogel Soar on the 22nd. Larry Peterson on the 23rd. Tracy Krause on the 24th. So please tune in for these shows and spread the word. You can find the stuff on my Twitter feed probably starting Monday for those shows. Now, without further ado, I'm going to hand the broadcast over to George Taylor. And here he talks about the Here Now, the Audio Fiction and Arts Festival. Take it away, George.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Narration by George podcast, the podcast on audiobooks, spiritual ideas, and other ideas of interest. This is number 15 in our series, and this week we're going to focus on an audio event coming up next week in Kansas City, Missouri. Here Now, the Audio Fiction and Arts Festival is the audio equivalent of a film festival for contemporary audio fiction, including live and scripted solo performances, audio theater, audio books, audio art, classic radio drama, sound design, and much more. This annual four-day festival offers a multifaceted program showcasing the many forms of audio fiction and sound art storytelling in listening sessions, live performances, and podcasts. The festival works to present audio fiction programs that exemplify traditions of craftsmanship as well as of aesthetic and technological innovation. This is the only festival of its kind in the U.S. dedicated to celebrating the art of recorded and live audio fiction storytelling in all its many genres and forms, so says Here Now Festival Director Cynthia Allen. You can find more online, the events, the cost, and everything at herenowfestival.org, or go to my website, that's narrationbygeorge.com, and click on the festival banner on the first page. Yours truly is proud to have been selected to be a part of this festival. So on Thursday night, June 11th, I'll be part of the opening night's readings from the writing of Mark Twain. Of course, Twain was born in Missouri. His writings are still loved and read. Big Twain fan here. That Thursday night, I will be sharing the stage with Roseanne Devine and Kelly Hazen as we read from various Mark Twain works. I will start out by reading a selection from Huckleberry Finn. I'm going to let you hear a sample of it. This is from Chapter 8. Huck has escaped his kidnapping by his pappy. He's hiding out on Jackson's Island. And here's a sample of what I'll be presenting next Thursday night. The sun was up so high when I waked that I judged it was after 8 o'clock. I lay there in the grass in the cool shade, thinking about things and feeling rested and rather comfortable and satisfied. I could see the sun out at one or two holes. Mostly it was big trees all about and gloomy in there amongst them. There was freckled places on the ground where the light sifted down through the leaves, and freckled places swapped about a little, showing there was a little breeze up there. A couple of squirrels sat on a limb and jabbered at me very friendly. I was powerful, lazy, and comfortable. I didn't want to get up and cook breakfast. Well, I was dozing off again when I thinks I hears a deep sound of boom way up the river. I rouses up and rests on my elbow and listens. Pretty soon I hears it again. I hopped up and went and looked out at the hole in the leaves, and I seen a bunch of smoke laying on the water a long ways up, about abreast the ferry. And there was the ferry boat full of people floating along down. I knowed what was the matter now. Boom! I see the white smoke squirt out of the ferry boat's side. You see, they was firing cannon over the water trying to make my carcass come to the top. I was pretty hungry, but it weren't going to do for me to start a fire because they might see the smoke. So I sat there and watched the cannon smoke and listened to the boom. The river was a mile wide there, and it always looks pretty on a summer morning. So I was having a good enough time seeing them hump for my remainders, if only I had a bite to eat. Well, then I happened to think how they always put quicksilver in loaves of bread and float 'em off, 'cause they always go right to the drowned carcass and stop there. So, says I keep a lookout, and if any of them's floating around after me, I'll give 'em a show. I changed to the Illinois edge of the island to see what luck I could have, and I weren't disappointed. A big double loaf come along, and I almost got it with a long stick, but my foot slipped, and she floated out further. Of course, I was where the current set the closest to the shore. I knowed enough for that. But by and by, along comes another one, and this time I won. I took out the plug and shook out the little dab of quicksilver and set my teeth in. It was baker's bread. What the quality eat? None of your low-down corn pone. I got a good place amongst the leaves and sat there on a log munching the bread and watching the ferry boat and very well satisfied. And then something struck me. I says, now I reckon the widow or the parson or somebody prayed that this bread would find me, and here it is gone and done it. So there ain't no doubt, but there is something in that thing. That is, there's something in it when a body like the widow or the parson prays, but it don't work for me. And I reckon it don't work for only just the right kind. I lit a pipe and had a good long smoke and went on watching. The ferry boat was floating with the current, and I allowed I'd have a chance to see who was aboard when she came along, because she would come in close where the bread did. When she got pretty well along down towards me, I put out my pipe and went to where I fished out the bread and laid down behind a log on the bank in a little open place where the log forked I could peep through. By and by she came along, and she drifted in so close that they could have run out a plank and walked ashore. Most everybody was on the boat. They was talking about the murder. I could see 'em first rate, but they couldn't see me. Then a captain sung out, "Stand away!" And the cannon left off such a blast right before me that it made me deef with noise and pretty near blind with smoke, and I judged I was gone. If they'd have had some bullets in, I reckon they'd have got a corpse they was after. Well, I see I warn't hurt, thanks to goodness. The boat floated on and went out of sight around the shoulder of the island. I could hear the booming now and then further and further off, and by and by, after an hour, I didn't hear it no more. I knowed I was all right now. Nobody else would come a-hunting after me. I got my traps out of the canoe and made me a nice camp in the thick woods. I made a kind of tent out of my blankets to put my things under so the rain couldn't get at 'em. I catched a catfish and haggled him open with my saw, and towards sundown I started my campfire and had supper. Then I set out a line to catch some fish for breakfast. When it was dark, I sat by my campfire smoking and feeling pretty well satisfied, but by and by it got sort of lonesome. So I went and sat on the bank and listened to the current swashing along and counted the stars and drift logs and rafts that come down, and then went to bed. There ain't no better way to put in your time when you're lonesome. You can't say so. You soon get over it. As I said, I will not be alone in this outing. Among my companions is Rosie Devine. I talked with her about this event and about her acting career, and she shares a sample of her reading as well. I'm sitting here with Rosie Devine, thanks to the world of Skype, and she's up in Kansas City and me down here in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And welcome, Rosie, to the Narration by George podcast. Good to have you here.
It's great to be here.
I'm glad to have you. And unfortunately, Kelly Hazen, who is also going to be reading with us at the Here Now Festival, is unable to join us. We will still talk about her a little bit. Kelly, not behind your back. It's all good, I promise you. So Rosie is an actress who has appeared in theaters in Kansas City, Omaha, St. Louis, worked in independent film, commercial, voiceover, radio. She actually has 9 audiobooks she's produced, courtesy of Audible.com, and she lives, works, plays, and reads in Kansas City. You are a Kansas City native, right, Rosie?
Yes, I am. Born and raised here.
Wow, cool. Cool town. But this is your first appearance that you're making at the Here Now Festival, right?
Yes. I took part in the Here Now Festival in their workshop 101 a couple of years ago, but this is the first time I'm actually taking part in the festival itself as a performer.
All right. Now, Rosie and I, and along with Kelly, we're going to be reading the first night, Thursday night, June 11th at Prospero's Books. We'll be a part of the Mark Twain reading, celebrating Mark Twain. Rosie will be reading a section. I'm going to have her read a little bit of what she's going to read for us, just to give you a sample. But, Rosie, how did you come to this world we call acting?
Oh, golly. I think when I was probably in high school, I took the drama class, just sort of kept doing community theater. Got a degree, my college degree was in theater. It was just a general theater degree, though, and just kept working through the years. Got my equity card at one point and then got rid of it a few years later, and just been hanging about the theaters ever since then. I took a hiatus when I was married and then came back to it afterwards, and even took up with old friends in the theater who I'd been in school with. So.
All right. And your current work is audiobooks, but you're also doing some other theater stuff as well there in KC, right?
Right. Yes. I'm auditioning all the time and got some callbacks and things coming up soon. I take part in a radio program called Shots in the Night on KKFI Radio here. And it's on once a month. We write little skits and perform them. There's a group of 9 of us who take part in that. This month is going to be, it's always the first Thursday of the month. And this month is going to be, I think, Aliens. And then we're going to perform one called Jokes in June. We've just been collecting jokes, and we're going to go through one of those kind of things. Last year, we went through the 7 deadly sins. Each month had a theme.
All right. So what's your favorite kind of drama? What do you most like to do?
As far as performing or watching?
Performing.
Yeah, I love farce. I love farce.
Mm-hmm. Okay, why farce?
I don't know. It feels natural to me, maybe because it's so close to life.
Okay. All right. Less acting involved?
No. There's a great deal of acting involved in farce. Yeah. It's just a great kind of comedy. Some of the great comedy plays have been farces.
And, True.
I think because that there's that element of reality is lifted from it because it's so ridiculous. The situations can become so ridiculous. Some of the Alan Aykroyd kind of plays where, all the slamming doors, those kind of things are just wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what led you into the world of audiobooks?
I think partly the Here Now Festival opened me up because I was listening to the radio on my lunch hour one day and heard about this, and I just ran back to the office and signed up and got involved in listening and things there. And then I started listening in the car. I just started popping radio audiobooks into the car whenever I drive. And about a year ago, my acting coach teamed up with a former student who is narrating audiobooks, and they started teaching some classes, 4-week classes on narration. And I took the first one and just took off from there. ACX has been a great resource for those of us in Kansas City, because there's not much else happening in the audiobook industry here. We don't get the opportunities people on the coast do. So I've been going through that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Same thing here in Chattanooga. I mean, we if it's not for ACX, we're not doing anything really in the world of audiobooks, because it's not happening here either. So
right.
Yeah, it's just seems to be a New York and Los Angeles and those areas seem to draw that.
Right.
But then that's the way the theater is right now.
So you
have recorded 9 audiobooks. What genres have you recorded in?
I started, the first thing I did was sort of business help, self-help kind of business type of thing. I did some short children's stories, which were great fun, little Cajun girls. So I got to work on Cajun accents, and I've done a wonderful short story. I've done a novel about people who live in a retirement village called The Last Stop. And so a series of narrations, the listener becomes the newest resident of this retirement village, and people start talking to him or her, whoever you are. So you become part of the book yourself. So you are that extra person. I just recorded, Lizzie Borden just came out about 3 weeks ago, mm-hmm. Lizzie Borden. And that's just beautifully written. Elizabeth Engstrom is a wonderful writer, and we're quite excited about this one. The anniversary of the murders is in August 4th, so hopefully something will come of that, you know, for Lizzie Borden fans and people who have read the book, because the book had gone through 4 printings when it was available in book form, and now it's on ebook and audiobook. And so it was quite a, you know, had a nice run, and I think people who read the book may want to hear the audiobook now.
I hope so. It sounds interesting. So in your contact with the Here Now Festival, what to date has been your best part of it or your favorite part of it?
Oh, golly. The first year when I was involved in Workshop 101, we were literally in classes all the time from like 10 a.m. to 10 p.m., so we didn't get to do much. Mm-hmm. I listened to Netherworld, a Neil Gaiman book. We got to go in and you listen to that. And it was one of those, not so much a narrated book, but almost a radio program.
Okay.
And that seems to be a really hot genre, especially in the British Isles, I guess. And there's a wonderful local group called Right Between the Ears, which is a lot like the, what is the Washington Steps or something?
Capitol Steps.
Yeah. It's a lot like that, but not so political. It's just
Capital Steps is all political satire. Beautifully done.
Right. Well, they do things kind of like that same kind of pace and all, mm-hmm. except it's not political satire. It's just very, very funny. And they will be performing, I think, on Friday night. And I always go to those performances when I can. They're really, really good. If I can get into any of the anything that Barbara Rosenblatt is doing, that gives some great advice. And last year I listened to Robin, I forgot her last name now, and Barbara and some of the other people came in and they just read some excerpts from things that they chose that were fun for them. And to watch them at work was really great.
I bet it is. I'm looking forward to this because I've mentioned this on air, but I'm going to be sitting with Barbara in a one-on-one coaching session. I'm about as stoked about it as I can be.
So, oh, yes, yeah. Yes. There was a lot of competition for what you got.
Yeah, I know. I'm just going, yeah. What, I got you, this?
You're the man. I mean, that was wonderful. Yeah. And I'm so glad that I get to be working with the person who got it.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And I'm looking forward to working with you, too, really. So we're going to be reading Mark Twain together on Thursday night at Prospero's Books at 5:30 p.m. if you're in the Kansas City area and listening to this. That's on June 11th. And you get free pizza if you're a pizza eater. That's a wonderful thing. So we are going to be reading Mark Twain. Rosie and myself and Kelly Hazen will all be reading sections from different books. I've got a section I'm going to read from Huck Finn. Kelly is going to read a piece out of Tom Sawyer, the Whitewashing of the Fence. And Rosie's got a selection out of the Diaries of Eve, if I remember
Adam
right.
And Eve.
Adam and Eve, okay.
Right.
The Diaries of Adam and Eve. And what section are you reading out of that?
Well, I'm doing a few days here early in the diaries when they've just sort of getting used to each other being around and have just naming of the animals is one section we'll be doing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. You want to share a sample with us, set it up and share it with us?
Sure. We're going to start with a Monday. The diary itself starts with Saturday, and Eve has just come into her consciousness. But we're going to start with Monday with Adam and then go into Wednesday a few days later. And, of course, I guess the days in these could be eons. So here we go.
Okay.
Monday. This new creature with the long hair is a good deal in the way. It is always hanging around and following me about. I don't like it. I'm not used to company. I wish it would stay with the other animals. Wednesday. We are getting along very well indeed now and getting better and better acquainted. He does not try to avoid me anymore, which is a good sign and shows that he likes to have me with him. That pleases me, and I study to be useful to him in every way I can so as to increase his regard. During the last day or two, I have taken all the work of naming things off his hands, and this has been a great relief to him, for he has no gift in that line and is evidently very grateful. He can't think of a rational name to save him, but I do not let him see that I am aware of his defect. Whenever a new creature comes along, I name it before he has time to expose himself by an awkward silence. In this way, I have saved him many embarrassments. I have no defect like his. The minute I set eyes on an animal, I know what it is. I don't have to reflect a moment. The right name just comes out instantly, just as if it were an inspiration, as no doubt it is, for I am sure it wasn't in me half a minute before. I seem to know just by the shape of the creature and the way it acts what animal it is. When the dodo came along, he thought it was a wildcat. I saw it in his eye. But I saved him, and I was careful not to do it in a way that could hurt his pride. I just spoke up in a quite natural way of pleased surprise, and not as if I was dreaming of conveying information, and said, "Well, I do declare, if there isn't the dodo." I explained without seeming to be explaining how I knew it for a dodo, and although maybe he was a little piqued that I knew the creature when he didn't, it was quite evident that he admired me. That was very agreeable, and I thought it more than once with gratification before I slept. How little a thing can make us happy when we feel that we have earned it. Tuesday. I get no chance to name anything myself. The new creature names everything that comes along before I can get in a protest, and always the same pretext is offered. It looks like the thing. There is the dodo, for instance. Says the moment one looks at it, one sees at a glance that it looks like a dodo. It will have to keep that name, no doubt. It wearies me to fret about it, and it does no good anyway. Dodo. It looks no more like a dodo than I do. How's that?
That's wonderful. Thank you. Oh, it's been many years since I've read that book, and I've forgotten the very sharp and wonderful wit that's a part of it. And,
yes,
of course, that's classic Mark Twain.
Right. And, you know, Thornton Wilder took this book and turned it into a play.
I didn't know that.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Really?
Right.
Oh, my goodness. I've got to look that up now.
Yeah, I do too. Now I want to go read the play.
Yeah, excellent. Actually, I do too. I'm going, whoa, I got to check this out. All right. So what else would you like to share with us, Miss Rosie, that I haven't asked you about?
Oh, golly. I probably had things in my head before I read. Well, right now I'm working on a new book about Henry Kissinger, a biography there.
I bet that's fascinating.
I think it will be. I haven't gotten into it yet. I've just printed off my pages and started trying to organize things.
Uh-huh.
So it's a short biography, about an hour and a half long, I think.
Well, thank you for joining me. Thank you for spending a few minutes with me. I appreciate it very, very much. And I look forward to meeting you in person next week.
Yes, yes. And we'll do the tour of Kansas City and we'll have some Mexican food here, I guess. You said you wanted.
Mexican or Italian. I mean, just whatever works with a guy with a no-meat diet.
So. Great. Okay. We'll find you something.
There we go. Rosie, thank you for joining me, and we'll see you next week.
Okay.
All
bye.
Right. Bye. My other companion is actress Kelly Hazen, Kelly could not join me for the interview for this podcast, so let me just tell you a little bit about her. From her website, it's kellyhazen.net, I get the impression there's not much she doesn't do. Actress, writer, singer, dancer, mother, teacher, preacher, friend, tinker, tailor, soldier, spy, your worst nightmare, a friend to all, and a sister to every other Girl Scout. Hey, that's a quote, folks. She's worked in film, television, off-Broadway, done other stage work all over the country. She's an Audible-approved producer and a two-time Earphones Award winner from Audible Magazine. She was born and raised in Kansas City, and currently she plays Dr. Bartlett on ABC's The Young and the Restless. She's a three-time Chicago Joseph Jefferson winner, two-time Los Angeles Ovation Award winner. She's also a lecturer for the world-renowned Griffith Observatory in Los Angeles. And on Thursday night, she's going to be reading from Tom Sawyer. You'll learn how to whitewash a fence, Tom Sawyer style. Now, I don't have a Mark Twain sample for you to hear from her, but I do have the following from her website.
Lila Mae Alcott sat behind the wheel of her cocoa-colored Bentley with a cream interior as the air conditioning blasted. Two faces stared out the glass door of the posh shop the Bentley was parked in front of. Lila Mae was oblivious to all as she focused on her cell phone, muttering to herself. "Oh, no," she said. "Not only is Mercury retrograde, but the moon is void, and it was just full in Scorpio, and will no doubt clobber my sisters big time." Lila Mae exited the astrology website and pocketed the cell phone. Then she switched the car off and retrieved her keys out of the ignition. She opened the door, then noticed the girls' faces pressed against the glass. Lila Mae waved before she swung her shapely legs out of the car. She grabbed for her straw purse and the custom-made frilly parasol, vintage 1900s, and a shade of buttercream that matched her suit. Lila Mae aimed the umbrella out of the open door and pressed a button on the handle, and the parasol quickly sprung open. The Alcott Chocolates Company heiress climbed out of the car and bumped the door closed with a trim hip. She pushed a button on her key remote and set the car alarm. "Yes, Mother, I'm protecting my face from the sun," Lila Mae said under her breath as the sun blazed down from the Houston sky. It was unusually warm for January, but the weather had been crazy all last year, and it appeared to be heading in that direction once again. Lila Mae walked determinedly on 4-inch acrylic heels toward the upscale clothing shop on Kirby Drive at West Alabama. A tinkling bell announced her arrival, and the staff of two swooped down on their familiar customer.
"How nice to see you, Miss Alcott," Nadine tittered.
She retrieved the parasol, collapsed it, and handed it back to Lila Mae, scanning the perfectly made-up face. "Not an age spot in sight," Nadine observed. Money had its advantages.
"Madge, I mean Mrs. Abercrombie, is in the dressing room,"
Mary announced in a moderated whisper, eyes wide with knowing. One look at Mary told Lila Mae everything she needed to know. She headed toward the back of the store, fearing the worst. "You don't suppose Madge is trying on anything sensible, now do you?"
"She's going to tell you it's for Sissy,"
Mary whispered. Keeping pace beside Lila Mae, she made the gesture of slitting her throat. Did she actually say she was shopping for Sissy, or for you not to tell me? Lila Mae shuddered at the thought. Snickering, Nadine returned to the counter, popping her gum loudly. "Madge, let's see what you found," Lila Mae bellowed from outside the dressing room. She sat down on a horrid little orange plastic chair that she thought may have had a past life in a cafeteria during the 60s, but was suddenly popular again. The curtain parted, and Madge Abercrombie posed. Her magenta-tinted curly hair forged a sharp contrast to the robin's egg blue shimmery spandex shirt. The cropped cargo pants did fit her to perfection, but she was unaware that her sister cringed inwardly. "Are you going for the I'm 66 and have Alzheimer's so I won't remember this ensemble tomorrow look?" Lila May threw at her older sister. The bell on the front door tinkled the announcement of another shopper. Chance Walker sauntered up to the sisters and drew out his official Houston Police Department's detective's badge.
"Am I going to have to make an arrest here, ladies?"
he asked in his gruffest voice. "Get out the handcuffs, officer. Madge won't go quietly," Lila May said, as she raised her hands, blue spandex forgotten, and went to greet him. Chance and Lila May shared a giggle. They hugged in a best-friend way. She appraised his charcoal suit and crisp white linen shirt and multicolored tie, none of which were off the rack. Lila May was pretty sure that Chance was the best-dressed detective on the force and the wealthiest cop in Houston, having been raised in River Oaks.
"Saw the cars and thought I'd drop in," Chance said.
"You got here just in time," Lila May claimed as she brushed imaginary lint from his suit jacket. Chance did look good in a suit, and he was fit and trim for his 56 years, Lila May thought. They stood arm in arm, Chance towering over Lila May by a good 6 inches.
"Hi, Chance. Like it?" Madge asked. "Why should Sissy get to have all the fun?"
She disappeared behind the dressing room curtain. "Because she's 22, or maybe because she's your granddaughter," Lila May offered. "I knew this shopping trip was going to be disastrous as soon as you mentioned this place. Why do you do this to yourself?"
That's actress Kelly Hazen, who will be appearing with Rosie Devine and myself for the Here Now Festival Mark Twain Celebration in Kansas City, Missouri. That starts on June 11th. The three of us will be reading Mark Twain that evening, starting at 5:30 p.m. at Prospero's Books. Admission is free to that part of the festival. This festival looks to be a lot of fun, so I invite you, if you're anywhere in striking distance of Kansas City, to come on by. Well, that's all the time for the Narration by George podcast this week, and probably for next week as well. Since I'll be at the festival next week, travel time will prevent this podcast from being new then, so just listen to some of the other podcasts. Catch up. Enjoy. Don't forget, you can catch me on the web at narrationbygeorge.com. Like my Facebook page. Please like my Facebook page. It's Narration by George. Follow me on Twitter. I am at @narrationbygeo. Find me on Pinterest. It's Narration by George. And join me in 2 weeks. That'll be on Wednesday, June 17th, when the Narration by George podcast will again be new.